Approaching on a 25 seconds. 20 seconds and counting. On at 15 seconds, guidance is internal. 12, 11, 10, 9, ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, all engine running. Liftoff, we have a liftoff, 32 minutes past the hour. Tower cleared.
And as Apollo 11 does its roll program, this podcast now does its roll program. The tape is rolling. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. My name is Grant Cameron, and you're listening to the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. Thank you for taking time from your life to be here.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. It's Grant Cameron, and I have a good friend of mine on today, a guest, Neil Gower, who I've been with a number of times. He runs conferences. He'll get into what he does, why it's important, and why I love him. And at the very end, if you are going to stick around, you need to, or if you can't stick around, at least replay the end, because Neil's going to do some poetry for us. And I, two things in school I hated. One was poetry, but I love Neil Gower's poetry. And the other one I hated was Shakespeare. And I now basically quote the famous line from Shakespeare: "All the world's a stage, all the men and women, aliens and alien are, and angels are but actors. They have their entrances and exits, and each man plays many roles." And I came to suddenly realize that maybe Shakespeare knew something that we're just starting to discover now. Welcome, Neil, from California, correct? You're still in California?
Thanks, brother. I'm actually in Yucatan right now, Mexico.
Oh, you are?
Wow. Yeah, I've been there for 4 months.
Wow. Is that? Tell me why that is. What's going on there?
So, well, I love this area. I love Playa del Carmen area and just the Mayan pyramids. So I've been coming down here every year for the last 5 years and filming ancient sites and creating documentaries for Portal to Ascension YouTube. So this time, because of all the craziness going on in the U.S. and all the restrictions in California, I decided to come to a place where I'm in paradise, you know, and there's a lot more open people with less restrictions. Yeah. So I've been here. By the time I leave, I would have been here for 6 months. Wow. Coming back in like a month.
I was actually in Playa del Carmen. I'll tell you a weird little funny story. I mean, if you've ever heard it. I went to on a cruise, and we were supposed to go into the place across the channel there, but they had the big hurricane there. And so the whole thing was wiped out. So we went into Playa del Carmen, and we got off the cruise ship, went on the dock there, and came to the resort there. And I'm sitting there, all sitting here, Grant. I go, what? And I look, and it's I worked at the University of Manitoba, and this was the head carpenter, and his name is Swan. He says, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "What are you doing here?" I couldn't believe it, you know, come to Mexico. And then so we chatted, and so we came back, and I thought it was kind of weird that you'd meet somebody in Mexico that you'd come to Canada, the same place. So about a year later, he comes up, he says, "I saw you in Mexico again." I said, "I wasn't in Mexico." He said, "Yeah, you were." And I had done with Jaime Masson, had done an interview with me, and it was playing on Mexican TV. So he was at the resort the second year. He's like, "You're in Mexico again." So I'm familiar with Playa del Carmen, and it's a beautiful area.
And, how long ago was that you were down here?
Oh, that's going back. So I've been retired 10 years. So that's probably 12 years ago. It was when the big hurricane took place, right after.
Yeah, yeah. So that was probably Cozumel, right, that you were going to?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of weird to see the power of nature to take out that concrete deck. The dock, I couldn't believe it, because the ship went by it. You could see it. And it was just amazing. I just couldn't believe how much damage was done there.
Wow. Yeah, it's so beautiful here. And then I like to go to the beach, walk to the beach, and then I go to different ancient sites and pyramids. And every year they're actually finding new things here, because so much is underneath all the trees in the jungle. Now they have LIDAR technology. So literally like every year they're finding a new city in the jungle. So it's constant content for me to explore.
And you're doing that on your Portal to Ascension YouTube channel?
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about your organization, what you do, and where people can find your stuff if they want to look this up.
So Portal to Ascension, I'll just skip to right when it was created. In 2008, I created Portal to Ascension. I had it as an online group for 2 years before that. It was called 2012 Consciousness, Mind Evolution, and Presence. And then in 2006, it was a Facebook group. Thousands of people started joining the group. So after a series of like shifts in my own consciousness and my own perspective, from going from conspiracy theorist, conspiracy factualist, let's say, to spiritual and realizing the bigger picture, in 2008, I had a shift in which I had a dream to change the name to Portal to Ascension. And then I changed the name and I started doing small events. I started with meditation events, sound healing events, hypnosis events to unlock creative potential. And then by 2009, 2010, I went on a few international tours to Canada to down to San Diego, doing events on sound healing, doing meditation events. But then in 2010, I did my first all-day ancient alien conference because I was into extraterrestrials for like 8 years. My first introduction to this information was the Sumerian tablets. So I was into ancient alien information. So I called on a few people that, you know, colleagues, people that we know in the circuit. And in 2010, I did an all-day ancient aliens conference. And from then onwards, like until 2012, I continued doing that, small events and then one larger conference until 2012, where I did Cosmic Reunion 2012 in November 2012, and then Cosmic Reunion Fourth Density in March. And those are two 3-day conferences, kind of like the Portal to Ascension conference that you came to, just call something else. Bashar was the headline at the first one. And it was me experimenting with all the people that had joined these Facebook groups. I wanted to see if I could create an event, fly out all these speakers, and if people would show up. So that was the milestone in 2012 for Portal to Ascension. And then I just continued like doing bigger and bigger productions until 2015, where I created the online university that you're familiar with since you've spoken it so many times. And then in 2015, started with one event a month. And then in 2018, it's been 110 events a year now at this point. And basically every topic I've had the opportunity to think about that I wanted to learn about, or that I have thought about, but I haven't created an event yet, I either have done an event on, or I have it in the pipeline over the next few years. So we explore a lot of information. I would say around half of the information is deep dives into ancient history, but kind of redefining our timeline. What is that true world history? Where do we come from? What were the lies and manipulations in our history that took us away from the truth of ancient civilizations? But that directly connects to the extraterrestrial question. It also connects to our spirituality, because when you look at these ancient civilizations, all of a sudden you see that they had an advanced awareness of quantum energy, right? And they also had an advanced awareness of spiritual consciousness. And besides that, UFOs and everything has always been close to my heart, disclosing the truth of the extraterrestrial presence. So now I just curate and cultivate all these events every single year, going deep into topics that can really help expand people's consciousness and empower them to realize the beauty of who we are and how we can live in harmony with ourselves and the planet. And that's all at portaltoascension.org, and also on my YouTube, youtube.com/portaltoascension.
And you have a lot of people when you do your 3-day events online, or mm-hmm. whether you're doing them, you have like 40 people. So how do you know so many people? I mean, do you read? I mean, how do you, it seems like that I learned a lot of the people that you had. I didn't know about them until I saw them on your site. So
I'm always researching, right? So from 2000 to 2008, I didn't do any events. I was just researching, reading, and going to events. So I made all these friends and connections, and I would go up to speakers and ask for their emails and even some of their numbers. And then sometimes I would have dinner with them at the events. And so then they would recommend other people. So by the time 2008 hit, I knew a lot of people that were doing this information, and I just started reaching out to them. But when I first got into doing events, I was really heavily into channeling, and then I became more into research-oriented information and started going to conferences like UFO events, ancient history summits, things like that. But I also have a part, because Portal to Ascension, we're pretty much like a full-on conscious event production company. So part of that is a constant researching of new speakers. So I don't want to keep having the same people over and over. So when I do big events like that, it gives me an opportunity to do a lot of research and bring on new people that I want to interview, so I can get a feel for them to see if I want to put them into another event, maybe a paid event or an all-day summit or something like that. And now for the last 5 years, because I've been doing so much, I have all types of people contacting me to be speakers, and they send me their books, they send me their videos. So there's a constant research going on. I even have individuals working for me that if I can't research them, they'll read the book or they'll watch the videos and then give me a summary on it. Just because I want to, Portal to Ascension, the mission for us is not only to get this awareness out, but to give people a voice that are doing this work so that they can get their awareness out. So we're constantly asking for new people to come in and showcase the information on our platform.
Wow. We'll get to your upcoming events, but I want to go back to pyramids. You mentioned pyramids. Have you watched the discussions I've been having with Jimmy Blechette? Do you know Jimmy Blechette?
I've heard of him, but I haven't watched your discussions. No, tell me.
Okay, because he uses the 144 frequency. He's a radio guy he's originally from Quebec, Canada, moved to California, had his radio license when he's 12 years old and started bouncing signals off the moon and stuff like this. He got this massive array and then decided he was going to send out a message and suddenly got back a message and started this whole non-human intelligence conversation. And so it started with him, and they had these radio technologies. When I wrote contact modalities, I knew they had this radio technology, and he would have this thing where you would use these little 8-watt radios, and they would get, put them on 144, and one of the radios would go off and it would start to chatter, and the other should be going off because they're all on the same frequency. So he developed this whole sort of technology, and I've sort of followed him. I've done a number of interviews with him. And he has, I always say to him when I interview him, he's like Albert Einstein. It's like, you think you're talking, he's the smartest guy I've ever seen in my life.
Wow.
And his thing's unraveling. And now he goes to the pyramids. So it's the connection of all the ancient sites. The last one, I'll send you the video that we did with the last one with him, where he takes all the ancient sites around the world and he links it in and he shows the mathematics behind this. It's unbelievable.
Whoa.
How he linked all the stuff together. And then we put them together with Gary Oldham from the Rendlesham Forest. He had the whole thing with the Rendlesham message, and that all links into the pyramids as well. And then the third person is Sarah Cosme. I don't know she was speaking at Paul's event a couple months ago, which is been on Gaia a few times. And she's a QHHT practitioner, a level 3. She's one of the, there was only 12 when she got it. She actually helps them train the QHHT. She's been around the world and stuff. And she started writing this book. She had the experience Dolores Cannon had. You remember the one with Nostradamus, where she's got this client and Nostradamus is talking, and then the client moves to Alaska. She says, oh, that game's over. And next client walks in, continues the story. Mm-hmm. Next client walks in, tells the story. And Sarah had the same story, but it had to do with Atlantis. So these people started coming in one after another, and they're telling the story about Atlantis. And the last one was on the Sphinx, where the woman comes in and she starts talking about the Sphinx. So suddenly we've got these three people, and I'm interviewing these people, and they're all connected. We put them together on email, where they're all on this thing where they've got this mathematical connection. And basically the idea sort of comes down is that we're being given this sort of message. And it's not like everybody thinks there's going to be an ET message who says, hey, we're going to land on the White House lawn and we're going to eat you or whatever, you know, a left brain message. And it's not. It's like the message in contact, where it's this really heavy mathematical thing where you got to figure it out. And Jimmy Blechette's even got it down to, he can actually determine with his mathematics the distance to the planets. All the planets are actually at the right distance according to his mathematics, and the speed of the galaxies. And he goes through this whole thing. It's just, and you're just like, how do you come up with this stuff?
Wow.
Unbelievable. So if you're ever going to do one on pyramids, those are the people. I'll send you some.
I do an annual conference called the Pyramid Knowledge Conference. It's my second year of doing it. So I would love to connect with him actually.
Yeah, I'll send That's you great. Some of the material. We actually did one with Gary as well about, and he sort of gave up because he had done he did the book with Peniston on the whole message about the 7 points around the earth and stuff like that. And it was, when you've read the end of the Rendlesham Enigma, it's all this mathematics, and your eyes will sort of roll back, and you can tell this, the size of the pyramid and which way it's facing and how it's linked with everything else in the world and these 7 sites and stuff. And so he sort of gave up because it was very hard to explain because there's so much mathematics. Well, Jimmy's is the same sort of thing. It's like the thing from Contact, the message, where you got to sit there and you got to figure it out. And as you unravel it, it becomes more. And Gary said he's actually got two more books just on the mathematics of that message that Jim Pennison got by putting his hand on the craft at Reynolds and Forrest. And you see there, it's this weird contact, but it all links back into the pyramids, which I never really paid any attention to. I figured like, it's pretty weird. And they probably had some stuff, whatever, but how does it link into UFOs? Now I'm seeing that they're basically showing this link to the pyramids and to all the ancient sites. When Jimmy did the last one with all the ancient sites, you just, your mouth is hanging open. And then we have the synchronicities when Nicole Sackage and I were doing it. So Nicole was running it on her channel. And then when we looked at the channel, when we were running it, it had, she had 1,440 subscribers, which is 144. And then Jimmy sends me the message in my thing. And he says, look at this. And he was putting the 144th message in my file on the same day.
So that's crazy.
You see this stuff and you go like, wow, this is pretty weird.
Yeah. That's amazing. So I just did a presentation. I did a deep dive research study into Pythagoras and his life. So I did a 4-hour presentation on Portal to Ascension recently. And part of it was to really dissect who he was as an individual, but where he got his information from, right? Because we say Pythagorean theorem, we give him all this credit, right?
Yeah.
And firstly, so a lot of people really have kind of an anger towards Pythagoras because they're like, well, he didn't find out all this information. So why did he say it was his? Well, firstly, he never said that it was his information. He actually said where he got the information from. And his followers that came after him after he died were the only ones that said it was from him. Kind of like Jesus. Jesus spoke about everywhere he went. But then when he died, people were like, oh, it's all Jesus's information. So as I was dissecting it and looking at where Pythagoras got his information from, it took me to ancient India. It took me to Babylon and the Pythagorean theorem, literally written in Babylonian text, and to the pyramids of Egypt. And so I did this whole deep dive, like maybe an hour of that presentation was specifically the mathematics of Egypt and showing about not only how many stones are in one pyramid, but if you were to align the pyramids next to each other, what it would create. Like if you get the three pyramids on the Giza Plateau and you line them up 1, 2, 3, right, just next to each other, it's the Pythagorean theorem. It's the exact Pythagoras, A squared plus B squared equals C squared. If you go to the Temple of Siren and you look at the distance from the Siren to the Great Pyramid, and then a specific equinoxes like summer solstice and equinox and so on and so forth, and then you divide it by 432, which is another number you get within the circumference of the pyramid, you get the circumference of Earth, you know? So it was almost like Egypt, like honestly seems to be a mathematical layout of all the information we need to rebuild society in case there is a wipeout of everything, like all the equations, all the mathematics to create it. So when he took this information, then his information was then hijacked by the occultist secret societies. And then they utilize his information in order to create societies and civilization as we know it, including how we create bridges, how we create arches. But all of this came from pyramid technology and the mathematics of how these are created. Including, let me say one more thing, the pyramid, the angle of the pyramid is actually the same angle as the tilt of Earth, 23.5 degrees, which is another like amazing thing. How did they know this information? Were they spiritually connected? Was it extraterrestrials that gave this information? Was it a past civilization like Atlantis that passed it down? No matter which way you look at it, it's something profound, right?
Yeah, which is what Gary brings that up, the 23.5. Which when I saw it, I said, holy cow, that's a triple harmonic frequency, the triple Schumann's resonance. And if you're familiar with the Bankston healing, when a person goes into healing, when they put the brain scan on and they realize there's a triple harmonic, a 7.8, a 15, and then the 23, and that the brains of the person being healed and the healer go into sync, and they've actually got this on tape. They actually go into this synchronicity at one point when the person is being healed. So 23.5, and Jimmy gets into that as well, the diameter of the earth and stuff. And it's almost like it's almost like mathematics, like people describe mathematics as sort of like the everything's built on mathematics, but mathematics is just symbolic of this very finely tuned universe, that when you when you break it all down, all the formulas are going to be very short and simple, because it's just showing these relationships, that everything is not a random world like we think it is. It's very carefully tuned, and people are starting to pick this up. So maybe you can you even have these people on for, you know.
Yeah, I would love to. Well, you just said a really great word, because you said mathematics, but then you said tuned, because the musical intervals, tuning, and mathematical intervals are one and the same. So the mathematics is like, is looking at it from the masculine based linear world, right? And then the music is looking at it from more of a cyclical nature. No one is better than the other. It's just like a feminine way and a masculine way to look at the same thing, which is why it's called universe. It's one verse, it's one frequency, one song, you know?
And Jimmy got that as well. Like, he decoded one of the messages coming back, because that's the first thing you think when you hear these messages coming across the radio is like, well, what are they saying? Because he'll send a signal. He's learned to make it into a take a photograph or something and put it into an audio signal and send it out on his big set in California there. And but when it came back, he decoded the one, and it had eight tones. And as soon as I saw that, I said, eight tones, that's like a musical scale. I mean, and you see all these connections where it's just one synchronicity after another. And he's got the other one where he actually, they have these little chirps that come across. And then he had a, he mentions a very famous writer was at his place in California. And he was saying to, they had an encounter with a being. And he said to this guy said to the being, he said, how do we decode this message? How do we code Jimmy's message? And he said, slow it down as much as you can. And that's the contact. That's how they did the contact thing, the message. It's like you're listening to the message, but you don't realize. So Jimmy's decoded one of these messages, and now he's working on trying to decode this other message with these chirps. Whoa. And he actually shows them at a very slow speed. And you can actually see that each chirp is different. The peaks and the valleys are different on each chirp. And so it's got a lot of information. We just haven't figured out what this message is telling us.
And okay, so he decoded one of them. Yeah. So what does it say?
Well, it has these eight tones. That's what it is. It's eight tones that come across. And so he takes the eight tones, and then he starts using the mathematics of the eight tones. He multiplies one against the other, gets the speed of light. He multiplies one against the other, the diameter of the earth, and all these tones. And they're all linked. When you start looking at all these tones, it explains everything in the universe, all these tones. And I'll send you the videos, and you can check this out, because every time I see him, I say, like, man, this is like talking to Einstein. It's like watching history being written, that he's and so they would get in, maybe ask you this question. It comes into this thing about inspiration. I mean, you talked about this, where you've had these inspirations where you're told, you know, what the name of the channel will be. I wrote Contact Modalities, and I believe very strongly in that. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that, about this idea that we think we're the smart guys, we're figuring this stuff out, and we are actually getting help.
Yeah. Well, a great example of that is when you look at ancient history and you look at specific times when great minds were on the planet, there were multiple great minds all around the planet that had the same kind of ideas. Yeah. You know, like Pythagoras' time, well, there was like four other people on the planet, including Buddha, that all had same ideas of reincarnation, right? So that goes to the whole thing of maybe this information's in the ethers, and it could be multiple things, not only the cycles of time, the evolution of consciousness, the devolution, the position of our solar system in the galaxy, the frequencies coming from the central sun, the black hole in the center. All of these can contribute to different levels of information and awareness being, you know, in the field around us. So I feel that when we get to certain levels, it's a collective download that we can all tap into. And another great example would be, you know, let's talk about Pythagoras for one more second. Pythagoras was into consciousness and spirituality and vibration being God and mathematics being God. Then Christianity came along. Christianity started hijacking his information, and the Knights Templar and the secret societies were the only ones that utilized it. And then Kepler and Galileo came along that were anti-church and anti-spirituality because of what they'd done. So they were Neo-Pythagoreans without the spirituality, right? But they all happened around the same time, but they were atheist about it. And then all of a sudden we get to 1900, which is technically the end of the Kali Yuga, the Dark Ages, and the beginning of the Energy Age, which is the Dwarpa Yuga, the Bronze Age. And then all of a sudden we have Max Planck, Tesla, and Einstein, all individuals that helped us understand the quantum reality, but all spiritual consciousness, right? And happening separate from each other. Even with Tesla, there was another individual that had the same equations that Tesla was coming up with on the other side of the planet, but was only a few days off from publishing it, you know? So there's definitely a collective download that we receive. So for me, when the whole download for Portal to Ascension came in 2008, it was like a 20-year package, like in one. Marketing plans, business plans, how many events I'm going to do, what's the eventual goal, what's going to happen. And I'm a skeptic at heart. It takes a lot for me to even realize that. It took me a good decade, maybe till 2018, until I finally owned that that actually even happened to me, right? But not, the more that I'm owning that it's actually happening, I'm getting this direct download of it, the more I'm able to implement it with comfort and ease and flow right into it. So I feel that I'm constantly getting these downloads, and it's just basically levels of awareness that I'm tapping into in order to give me the tools that I need so I can create what really needs to be created right now for the planet.
So you would believe in mission then, in terms of your being here at this time, this place, for some particular mission? Are you going?
Yeah, I feel that is the case, but I'm also very into the paradox that even just being and not having a specific mission of what you do is also part of the mission, because I feel that source, right, wanted to experience itself infinitely, infinite experience. And a good experience or a bad experience is still just an experience in the scheme of source, right? So no matter what you are, what you do, whether you're working at a 9-to-5 job, or if you're doing something actively like this, in the grand scheme of the singularity of the oneness, you're doing exactly what you need to do. Now, because we're going through this cycle of awareness and this ascension, a lot of individuals are incarnating to play the role for this awakening. And that's part of my mission on this planet. And this kind of goes back to Dolores Cannon's information of when there was a call out to the universe, she said, after the first nuclear bomb test, right? The splitting of the atoms started affecting all types of different realms. And then there was a call out to the universe, and the call out was, these people are going to destroy themselves, and they could even destroy other beings and other dimensions unless you incarnate onto this planet. So I really subscribe to that kind of information, that a lot of people started coming here on the planet to take an active role in helping us move away from a destructive nature and start helping us move towards being in harmony with nature.
So what, how do you see it? I mean, we have this, war going on now. I mean, are you optimistic or how do you see it unfolding?
I like to say I'm a hopeless hopeful. No matter what happens, I cannot help but be hopeful. When I see chaos, I see opportunity. When I see struggle, I see the ability to learn from our lessons. You know, when I see darkness, I see the contrast we need to achieve the light. So right now, since there is a lot of traumas on this planet, collective traumas, past life traumas, a lot of power and greed, these things can't sustain our experience on this planet anymore. So part of that is not going to just be roses and unicorns, as they say, right? We're going to probably see a lot of darkness before we see the light. And hopefully it's not in a way where there's mass deaths or anything, and that we can do it from more of a harmonic perspective of self-realization. But I don't really know how it's going to look. So when I see all of this stuff happening in the world right now, people having the opportunity to really reflect on what they really want and how they want to live. So with this war and everything, even though like I see it and I'm looking at it neutrally to see what's going to actually occur from this, I do believe that the eventual goal is going to be the ascension of humanity. And the reason why I believe that is not only because of my own intuition and my own feeling, but also looking at all the ancient scriptures that talk about this time. Many different cultures have all talked about the resurrection of the Messiah within us, you know? And if you look at the cycles of time, like the golden age and all that, that every ancient pre-flood, pre-Noah's flood civilization had within their texts, they all talk about these cycles. And there's only one civilization that actually had the dates, and that's the Indian civilization that had the dates of these shifts. And in between, if you look at the cycle and the dates on this calendar that they have, you can look at exactly what happened at those specific dates. And it's almost like something huge occurred at those times. So what happens at the end of the Kali Yuga and the beginning of the next Yuga is a period of wars, right? And the Kali Yuga ended in 1900 and it fully ends by the end of this century. And we're having all these great wars. So I feel a part of this is just the process that we're going through in order to really realize what we want. One thing I'm hopeful for is that we used to exist in a world where we were in this world of hierarchy and authority, where we'd give up our power to authority. We lived in this hierarchical reality. We've now stepped into a world of sovereignty and individuality. And part of that, I feel, will make it that we have the freedom of our own consciousness enough to not be completely controlled and go down a pathway that is for the hierarchical structure, for the authority structures, like we've been doing for the last thousands of years. So to answer your question more concisely, I'm extremely hopeful. I feel that eventually, I don't know how long it's going to take, 5 years, 10 years, 100 years, but I feel that we're on this upturn in consciousness.
Yeah. Have you ever had Paul Selig speak for your...
Well, you mentioned him at our last event, and then I connected with him on Instagram, and now I'm going to have him this year sometime because he talks
about the fact that in order to have the shift, you have to, all that's been built in fear has to be raised to the surface. It's like, lifting the rock and the little creeper crawlers come out that people are almost like they're not proactive, they're reactive. So it's not until something happens to you do you learn the lesson. Until then, everybody's just going. Let me ask you a question about, you talk about sovereignty and individual. How do you distinguish, break that from ego, where we have a situation where, like I always describe it as a football game, where, when you're in a huddle and you're playing in the Super Bowl, when the 10 players are all on the same page and we're going to go, but when you got five guys inside the huddle, who've got their middle finger up and saying, don't tell me what to do. I'm an individual. Yeah. How do you separate individuality from the moving together as one?
That's such a good question, because that's exactly what I was thinking too. So we got to break down the ages now. So the Kali Yuga started in 700 BC. It ended in 1700 BC.
Okay.
In between every single age, there's a 200-year transitory period. The age of the Kali Yuga, the age of authority, the age of hierarchy, and the age of delusion. Okay. The theme of the Dwarpa Yuga, the next age, is the age of individuality, sovereignty, and ideological communities. Society starts breaking down. People start creating communities based on ideology. But the last one is the age of energy. So we're at the beginning phases of understanding energy. Great example, electricity, quantum physics. Even better example, you and I are made out of energy, and what can we do with that? So we're at the beginning of that. So what also happens with the individuality at the beginning of this age, by the time this age is over, which is hundreds of years from now, we master being an individual. But in the beginning, we start seeing a little bit of kickback, because our individuality kind of goes hand in hand with our ego, and people fight for the individuality even when they don't really need to, and it actually goes against the collective good, right? So that is exactly what happens in the beginning. And what I would say to that is that it's probably going to happen right in the beginning, but what will happen eventually as we continue to move forward with this sovereignty is we'll eventually master it. I don't know how long it's going to take, but at this point, we're kind of in the learning phases of what it means to be a sovereign being and how to be connected to the collective good, how to support others and to work with others, but also be an individual. That is the balance that we need to find, because humans, we tend to react and we tend to go on extremes. We're on one side or the other. So how do we embrace both of them? And this goes to the whole concept of singularity versus duality. Singularity is the oneness. Duality is the experience of polar opposites, right? What I feel our goal is on this planet is to embody the singularity while we exist in a world of duality. And if we embody the singularity, we come from a place of balance. And part of not having those situations like you outlined is doing the collective work, working on our traumas. Why do we react? What is our emotional triggers? What happened to me as a child? All these different things that we bring to the surface and start healing will get us to a point that we can be sovereign beings without having the ego get involved.
Can we help others, or are we just on our own path in terms of how things go? Because sometimes I was just reading somebody's comment today that they're all upset that they can't change the world or whatever. And then you hear a lot of the spiritual teachers basically saying, no, yours is a silent path. Yours is to get your thing and be the example. So where do you come down on that?
So I'm a walking paradox, because I believe in both, right? But at the same time, like, I do really go with that you cannot truly love and give unless you truly love and give just to yourself. And then, religions and belief systems has made it that it's almost selfish to do that. So we can help others, but you really can unconditionally help others without expectations, without reacting to them, unless you've done that work that makes it like that. How can you give unconditionally without the expectation if they change or not? Because a lot of people who haven't done their own inner work, say your family, for example, you're like, you want your family to change, you haven't done the inner work, and you're just like, well, this is what's happening. Look what they're doing to us. Look at the conspiracy that's going on with all these things in the world. You need to change, right? That kind of response will only probably get that kind of reaction back to you where people aren't really, really ready to accept and understand it. So if you do your own inner work and you come to a place of peace and you're able to explain it from a place of peace, you give them the opportunity to really understand what you're saying. However, with that being said, you can never change anybody. People need to do it themselves. You don't know what kind of work that they've done themselves. You don't know if they their purpose on earth this time is to awaken like that. So all you can do is give information unconditionally without expectation and then just let people be and have their own experience about it. That's how I feel.
I think you're right there. I have the same thing where we struggle to do it. And yet that's why God created pain or the, because usually people won't move until it all falls apart. Like we have a situation now where, you know, it's 50-50. I mean, there's 50 on this side, 50. You can't vote in Congress to go to the bathroom. I mean, they can't do anything. And you wonder, how do you move? Because people are moving into their own corners. And that's where this sort of, it has to sort of fall apart before it builds up again, where we're sort of thinking that, you know, so I sort of agree with you. And that's the, it's a hard thing to live with. But the idea that you in the end you die by yourself and you don't get judged with everybody else. You just get judged as to, you know, how you did and what you did and that you plan to come in. And that's basically what I say to people is that you planned to come into the world probably for some reason. And all you got to do is figure out what you're supposed to be doing. And it really doesn't matter what anybody else is doing because, you know, it's your purpose to come in. You didn't, you know. You just do what you can. And so I appreciate what you're doing because you're doing an awful lot of material. Let's talk about some of the stuff that's coming up for you. Cause you have a lot of people. Talk about the following that you have, the number of, you know, people that you get huge numbers at events. So you've sort of reached out there and you're getting the word out.
Yes. So some of the upcoming events going on is, every year that passes, I feel like we get more ambitious with our productions, you know, because definitely connecting with more people and collaboration, because I really believe in collaboration over competition. The energy of inclusion is much more solid of a frequency than that of exclusion. The elite that know the information we know, extraterrestrials, and you go deep into this awareness in your past with all the things that they know, they come from the energy of secrecy and exclusion. We're coming from the fact that it's for everyone. So that vibration in itself, I feel, is what we need in order to move forward within humanity. So as every year passes, I bring on more and more people and I start producing events because I create 110 events a year. That's not even including my podcast and free YouTube shows. And within that, now I have certain people that I'm working with that help me co-produce events, like the annual Hybrids Conference, which is a two-day event every year on hybrid extraterrestrials, the annual Starseed Summit, the annual Walk-ins Conference, which is a two-day event every year on walk-ins, right? And then there's another five or six that are co-productions like that. This year, I started a series with my good friend Sharaya Dharma, in which I'm doing an ancient civilization every single year, because I used to do true world history conferences, right? True world history, meaning just like a bunch of amazing historians and alternative historians on what our true history is. But now after years of doing this work and getting such a huge following, I'm able to do specific topics all day. So we just did ancient Sumerian Mesopotamia conference last week. So all day 10-hour event just on Sumerian scriptures and Mesopotamia. And next weekend, this coming weekend, I don't know if you know Robert Edward Grant, but he's a really great pyramid awareness guy in ancient Egypt. The Hurtax, Paul Wallace, and William Henry, and a few others. We're doing Ancient Egypt and the Extraterrestrial Connection online conference. And that's going to be a 10-hour event on March 5th. And then we also have, I'm just jumping all over the place, then I'll tell you about some upcoming ones. A part of my Ancient Civilization series is a two-day event in June called the Indus Valley Civilization and Ancient India online conference. 2 days, 10 to 12 hours a day of literally like the last 50,000 years of subcontinent Indian history. Wow. Right? From scriptures to migration routes to why is it that half of the Indian gods are the exact same gods as Greece gods? Zeus is Indra, Athena is Saraswati. Everything about them is the same. Their background, their upbringing, both of them come from mountains. You know, so that kind of exploration, really going deep into the connections. And that goes to my original purpose of creating Portal to Ascension, to find the root of everything, where we all came from. And part of that is the root of all religion, because if you track these religions back to original source, you see that we were like within the same tribes And then something happened where the tribe split off and they took the pantheon of gods to different places, right? So that one I'm extremely excited about because, as you probably know, I'm Indian. So I've always wanted to know what my own roots are. And as I've been exploring my own roots, all I found is that there's so many controversial topics within that because of racism and white supremacy that when people start talking about the migration routes of India and how we connected to Greece, there's a lot of people that are, get very angry very quickly because they think that if you're saying this theory, that means you are pro-Aryan and you're saying that we only became civilized because of the white man. If you believe this theory, then you are kind of proving that everything came from India and nothing came out of Africa. So I'm just rambling here just about some thoughts. But so in this conference, this two-day conference, we're going to explore every theory that we can get our hands on in order to really kind of decipher what happened in that area of India.
Wow. Fascinating. Yep.
And then let me talk about a few more. So William Henry, Awakening the Pearl, two-day workshop. He's doing his online event, his annual event that's in person. He's doing it online on April 23rd, April 24th. This weekend, I am doing, on Saturday, that's tomorrow, I'm doing my Galactic Origins, Dimensions, and Black Holes. And this presentation is a three-hour presentation that eventually ends in the galactic story and the seeding of humanity. But the whole of it before that is breaking down dimensions, frequencies, the theories behind time travel, and a huge part is introducing you to the Milky Way galaxy, how the Milky Way galaxy rotates, how solar system is within that, what happens to our solar system in different positions within our galaxy, what the real distance is from the black hole in the center of our galaxy, and then also all these anomalies of what's occurring in our galaxy that you may have not have realized. For example, that we've been colliding with a galaxy called the Sagittarius Dwarf Galaxy for over 2 billion years. And that galaxy could actually be where Earth and our solar system originated from and then got absorbed into Milky Way. So that's going to be tomorrow. It's a very profound presentation.
You're doing that for a presentation?
Yeah, I'm doing that. Mm-hmm.
Huh. You're as smart as Jimmy Blachette.
Basically, it's my, like, this, I've always wanted to do a Galactic Origins presentation, but I'm so linear minded as well and scientific oriented. I wanted to provide a lot of science behind our Milky Way and our galaxy to kind of funnel us into the story about Galactic Origins to give it more credibility. So after I do all of that information, then I spend 30 minutes going through government documents, a lot of which that you showcased, basically proving that this is a reality. And then the last 30 minutes is all the esoteric information of the Lyrians, Assyrians, the Pleiadians, the fractalization from source and all of that, basically to lead up to that information. Wow. Yeah, it's going to be cool. Then we have mysticism and indigenous healing, which is next weekend as well. We have Marina Seren, who I'm not sure if you connected with her yet, but Alan's been doing a lot with her. She's doing a workshop called Make Contact with Extraterrestrials, which are basically tools and techniques to contact ET life. And she's a hybrid that has been in communication with many different ET races. She's only 21 years old. Give me an idea
which kind of contact modality she uses, because I'm...
Here, let me see if I can find it on this page. And if you want, if you can't attend the event live, I'll give you the replay too, because it would probably be really beneficial for your research. But she's an upcoming person in this community that is just like, she's from Spain.
Yeah.
And she's just known about her life and her past lives and ET lives for the last 5 years or so, since she was like 17, 16.
Wow.
So it doesn't say the tools here. It says how to develop discernment in your navigation towards ET contact, how to identify and let go of what might be blocking you from contact, guide on how to be a diplomat in an encounter or contact experience, what to expect in an encounter, and tools to manifest ED contact.
Wow.
That's what that one's about.
Incredible.
Yeah. And then I'll just mention a couple of more here, because the best way, everybody, to find out what we're doing is go to portaltoascension.org, online events. There's a bunch of events lined up there. And if you want, you can just go to our website, sign up, portaltoascension.org, sign up right there, and you immediately get access to 3,000 hours of free presentations, right? And it's sorted by speaker. You know, Grant is on there as well, and sorted by speaker and topic, hundreds of different topics, and you can really kind of get a feel for what we're doing here. And then I'll just mention one other one. Oh, this one's cool, and you like this one, brother. So, you know, as you know, I'm into ETs and UFOs. But I've always wanted to do one on people that knew about ET races, and they could talk about planets and the technology of ET planets. So I'm doing one called Extraterrestrial Races, Planets and Technology. And that's going to be on March 26th. And I'll tell you who's on it, because you know some of these people. Dan Winter, he's going to talk about theoretical physics, in which we can basically use what we're doing right now on Earth in order to be able to do things that we know will eventually take us to other planets. Mm-hmm. Geraldine Orozco, who's going to talk about DNA hybridization, the science behind it. Phil Gruber, who's going to talk about the root races. Barbara Lamb, who's going to talk about people that have had ET experiences, incarnations. Mary Rodwell is going to talk about the children and their experiences as different beings on different planets. Joan of Angels is co-hosting with me. Jenna Layden, she's going to talk about 30 different ET races and where they're from in the solar, in a galaxy. And then Adam Apollo and Alan Steinfeld. So that's going to be an incredible event as well.
Yeah, that'd be interesting, because I'm just coming out with a book called The UFO Sky Pilots. I deal with the 36 people who have flown the craft. And it's almost like Barbara Lamb got, you know, she had the experience where they said, listen carefully, you're going to be doing this, as if she was set there. And Mary Rodwell got all the kids with the can speak light language and stuff like that. And I got all the people who fly the flying saucer. So I've got, that book will be out shortly. So it's
so kind these are military officials.
No, these are experiencers. Chris Bledsoe. Oh, I do have one U.S. Air Force retired colonel out of L.A. that came after we did an event at Orange County. And he wasn't at the lecture, but he came to that dinner after, and they said, David, tell Grant about you flying the flying saucer. I said, you flew it? He said, yeah, it was a dream. I said, everything's just a dream. Tell me. And he went through the whole thing. I've got a 747 United Airlines pilot, just piles of people that all basically came to me. And it's all started with the consciousness thing, where I gave the consciousness lecture. There was a woman in Phoenix, Arizona, where they set me up with her. I thought she was totally crazy when she told me she's like in her 70s that she was flying the craft. I said, come on. Like,
wow. Man.
Like, and then suddenly all these people started coming to me one after another. Melinda Leslie had a couple that she had dealt with. And it's kind of a unique sort of thing, almost like I was the one who was supposed to put it out. So it didn't take me very long. I just put all these people together, and it's quite the interesting story. And it fits in with.
That's this week's episode of the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. I'm your host, Grant Cameron, hoping that you will join me for upcoming episodes. Links to my YouTube interviews, books, and my Facebook sites are in the show notes. If you love the podcast or learn something valuable, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, or give a review on today's episode. If you would like a certain paranormal subject dealt with in the future, please let us know. Until next time, watch this space, and thank you so much for listening.